Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's new movies are going to be The Batman, The Weekend Away, Pieces of Her, The Scary of 61st, and the 2022 Oscar-nominated Short Films. There's also going to be some news, the trailer park, and the traditional home cinema roundup as well. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
A little bit of a slow news, at least for movies, that is. There's a lot going on in the rest of the world, but let's sort of escape that and talk a little bit about the box office. Uncharted did unprecedentedly well. It opened up with like $40 million. It was at 20-some million last weekend. It's definitely topping the box office. Tom Holland's having a very good couple months here in the box office, because at number three is Spider-Man No Way Home. And of course, Dog is up there in the top three as well. You got Death in the Nile and Jackass Forever rounding out the top five. While movies like Spider-Man No Way Home is in the high $700 million it's made, and Uncharted is going to be crossing the $100 million mark by the time I'm done speaking the sentence, the rest of the movies have been somewhat middling. You're not getting a ubiquitous good performance across the board with all movies. You're getting certain movies popping out and doing well. And as I've been saying for months, those tend to be the event films that will draw a younger audience. Uncharted brings out the social audience into this. Spider-Man No Way Home, of course, and Jackass Forever, for as low budget as that was. Or something like Sing 2, which is families. And Sing 2 right now is on streaming. You can rent it VOD now, and it's still in the top 10. Even something like Marry Me, it's made about $20 million in theaters. If you got Peacock, you can watch it. The idea that streaming is killing the individual movies is a poor analysis of the news. It depends on the movie, and it depends on what's coming out. Now, obviously, if they had released The Batman this week on HBO Max, that would have certainly made the box office suffer a little bit. And I think that Warner Brothers finally going to have a bona fide hit on their hand, because they're getting all their money exclusively from theaters. But the thing that has been noted in box office right now is, and you can see it in the releases, last week there really wasn't anything new to talk about. And that's unheard of for even February a couple years ago. There's always a new release, except for weird weekends like the weekend after Christmas. But you almost always would get a major movie. But now the middling stuff, and that's all heading towards streaming. There's a lot of stuff that's coming to streaming. I've read different articles trying to say, oh, no, there's still TV, still a big deal. I was talking to somebody, and they asked me who still gets cable TV. And a lot of people still do. But what's interesting, I just had a whole situation where I was dealing with my mom and switching out her cable and everything. And she ended up just getting rid of cable altogether and just using the streaming services, because she doesn't use the cable. And she's in her 70s. That's your target market. I mean, the people who are using cable now are the people who 10 years ago still had a traditional antenna set up on their TV and didn't have cable. Now, what's interesting is, and Nielsen had this story that came out last year that makes it sound like, oh, it's not so bad for TV, because they said only a quarter of the time spent on TV is on streaming services. Everything else is network and cable. And I'm like, well, that doesn't sound right, does it? That just doesn't sound right. There's more people watching streaming. Plus, you've got a younger generation, like my kids, who grew up streaming stuff on their phone. So immediately when I said, oh, this is a Nielsen number, they don't know what people are watching on their tablets or their phones, and that's what most people under 30 are using. My kids just got their own apartment, and I mean, they got a TV because they wanted the big 4K TV, but a lot of they still will watch stuff on their phones. That's their preferred method. And they watch TikTok and YouTube. And I saw another quote that was saying Netflix and YouTube gets most of the stuff watched at home on TV, but I really doubt that most of the viewing of YouTube is actually going on a television across the room. Most of that's on a computer, or it's on a tablet, or it's on a phone. So I don't really know what these numbers are. And with those Nielsen numbers coming out, they're just measuring part of the people that are watching. They're just measuring part of the viewing habits, because quite literally, about one quarter of the households in the country don't even have cable, where that's way down from how many people had cable even just 3 years ago. So keep your eye on streaming. Streaming is still going to be a big thing, and it's not just because of the pandemic. I think one of the things the pandemic did is it forced people back in the homes, and then they had to sit there and they had to figure out what to do on Friday nights and Saturday nights because all the theaters were closed. And then they discovered the wealth of content that's out there on streaming. And now it's doubled down, and every month we're getting more and more stuff. And some of the other networks are stepping up. It's not just Netflix and Amazon Prime and Hulu and HBO Max or Disney. You got stuff like Epics putting stuff out there. Epics, which has been around longer than any of these things have been around in terms of streaming. You got the Roku channel is stepping up its game, trying to put stuff up, and that stuff's free. That just has embedded advertising. You're taking people who are using the Tubi and the Pluto TV model, and all these cable networks that think, oh, well, the Nielsen numbers are okay. You're just looking at a portion of it, and that entire pie is getting smaller, even if the percent portion is staying the same. And before you know it, I think cable is going to be a thing of the past, faster than the cable companies realize it. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is a TV series on streaming on Paramount Plus. This trailer dropped several weeks ago, and it is Halo, which is coming as a series to Paramount Plus on March 25th.
Covenant forces appear to be excavating some kind of object.
When I touched the object, I felt different.
What they did to us makes you numb.
And you just decided to help me. Why wouldn't a Spartan do that?
What does one do with a superhuman you're not sure you can trust?
Find the Halo. Win the war.
Now, I've never played Halo. I'm not much of a gamer. I don't have any of... I have a couple of the gaming systems, but my kids have played those. But I've always said one of the problems with gaming is in adapting it to the screen for either... Well, mostly for movies. Games are premise-based and put you in kind of this open-ended world, whereas movies need to be plot and character-based. In fact, one of the best gaming movies that's been around in the last several years has been Free Guy, which isn't actually based on a real game. It's just uses the game as a backdrop. And I'm curious to see if Halo works. Now, at least from what I know of the game, it looks very authentic. But we'll see if this thing works as long-form storytelling. So we'll see. I'm curious to see it. I'm very curious to see what we get with this series, if it's something that can go toe-to-toe with some of the bigger sci-fi content that's out there on streaming. The next one I want to hit really quickly is Bullet Train, which is coming to theaters on July 15th.
Take the gun.
Every job I do, somebody dies. I'm not that guy anymore.
Some conflicts require a gun.
Okay, what am I snatching and or grabbing?
A briefcase.
You said you wanted simple for your first job back.
Doesn't get simpler.
There's nothing simple about this job.
Something else going on here.
Yeah.
This is of Brad Pitt in this bubblegum pop looking hyper-realistic Asian influenced action movie where he's fighting people on a train. It really looks like they took Gunpowder Milkshake and decided to put a dude in it and put it all on a train. I mean, that's cool. I'm looking forward to it. It looks like it's leaning a little heavily into the anime influence of it, but that's okay. I mean, it looks like it might be a fun movie. I just hope it's not too long. This movie should be 90 minutes in and out and be done, because action movies that overwear their welcome can be a problem. We'll talk more about that later in the show. Anyways, that's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the 2022 Oscar-nominated short films.
Oh.
welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the 2022 Oscar-nominated short films. Now, if you remember a couple weeks ago, a week or two ago, I was talking about Hollywood and the Academy is going to pre-record some of their Oscar winners and pre-record some of the speeches and like a little mini ceremony before and then edit it seamlessly into the show in order to free up more time for musical numbers and celebrity garbage spots. And three of those categories that are being sidelined like that are the Oscar short films, because you got three categories. You got live action, documentary, and animation. And I found that to be a real shame. I mean, yes, sure, you know, the other, like, editing is being sidelined as well, and that's terrible, but at least those people seem to have advocates for them. There's nobody advocating for the short films. And I have been a huge, huge fan of short films, going all the way back to when I was a kid, and even when I was just starting and I was doing filmmaking and when I was doing early reviews, I loved short films. And if I ever go to a film festival, I always try to catch shorts programs because you can sample a whole group of films in a relatively short amount of time and get a 10,000-foot level about what's going on, at least what the tastes are from the juries and the selection committees. And one of the things with short films is no one's making money off of them. I mean, maybe Pixar is. There's always it's funny, there's no Pixar short film in this selection of short films this year, but usually Pixar has a short film in there, or the Walt Disney Company has a cartoon in the animated segment. So, yeah, there are some filmmaking companies that have a profit potential for these short films, but usually these short films are labors of love. Or they're obscure, smaller pieces. Some of them are very artistic. And I'm a huge fan of animation, but the live action stuff is out there as well. But my God, the documentary stuff, unless your name's Michael Moore or Dinesh D'Souza, no one's making money making documentaries. But nobody's making like authentic documentaries, even feature length. But the people who really are doing labors of love and having a thankless job are the people who are doing short documentaries. And a short film, usually most of them tend to be about, well, the documentaries tend to be a little longer. They can be 20 to 40 minutes. The short film live actions are 15 to 20 to 30. And then the animated stuff can sometimes be just a couple minutes long, sometimes 15, 20 minutes long. The animated stuff tends to be shorter. But these are great ways to look at some of the new up-and-coming filmmakers from around the world, because they sample everybody from around the world. This is not just English language films. But there are three short blocks, and they're available right now. If you go to shorts.tv, there's a place in there where you can click for showtimes, put in your zip code, and it'll let you know if some place is showing them nearby. Like, you know, I live in Columbus, Ohio, and the Gateway Film Center down near the OSU campus is doing the short films program, so you can get tickets and go see them at the theater there. And you can find them anywhere in the country because they've been releasing them. But let's talk a little bit about what's available. I don't have a trailer for these because, well, half of them are in other languages. And, there's 15 different films being represented in this whole thing. So it's not exactly talking about any specific film. But let's talk about my favorite, of course, is animation. Although I think animation, it's a different spread this year, partly because you have few populist films. There is one called Robin, which you can actually get on Netflix as well if you want to watch it in the comfort of your own home. And that's a cute little one about these mice and these birds. But that's very traditional. You know, this bird trying to, I think a bird's being raised by mice and it still wants to sing. But then there's some other more obscure stuff. There's one called Box Ballet, which is about this Russian ballerina and this Russian boxer who fall in love, even though they're at polar opposites of their performance levels. There's this one called Bestia, which is very bizarre. That's from Chile, and it's off kilter. There's another one called Affairs of the Art, which was, I think this one's Canadian, and it deals with some adult themes to it. And that's one of the things you'll find with these, just because they're animation does not mean they're always for kids. And especially the Windshield Wiper, which is the fifth film, that one is specifically contemplating what love is, and it's showing various versions of love that would be more graphic than you'd want to show a child. So I wouldn't take kids. I mean, you can show them Robin on Netflix, that's fine. But the rest of the stuff in the animated blocks are not for kids. So you do want to know that going in. But of those, I think they're all very interesting, but they are more edgy than you normally get with the animated short films for Oscar. Now, in terms of the live action stuff, one of the things you'll find with live action short films is they will be A, from multiple language sources. Like one's, I think, Ukrainian. One of them is Danish. There's a couple of them. I think one is either Polish or something like that. So that's one thing. And the second thing is they will also deal with some pretty heavy topics. One of them, called Take and Run, is about kidnapped women who are forced to become brides. And it's done in a very modern presentation of it with this woman, and she is basically agreed to be given to this family to marry off to one of the sons, and she's stuck there because that's what her family wants. This is not something where she's kidnapped under the cloak of darkness and nobody knows. Her family's in on it. And these are real things that happen. So yeah, that's a little bit uncomfortable. There's one called The Dress, which is about a dwarf, a woman who has lived her whole life and never really had a relationship, and her trying to strike up a relationship in the backdrop of her somewhat maudlin life. There's one called The Long Goodbye, which stars and is co-directed by Riz Ahmed, who was in The Sound of Metal last year, and he was in Rogue One. And it's a look at racism and white supremacy in England in particular, but of course it can fit in the look at what's going on in this country as well. There's one called On My Mind, which is this man who's suffering a great loss in his life, and he just wants to sing on this karaoke machine. Then there's one called Please Hold. This was the one I found most interesting. Please Hold is an American one, but it's about a sort of a what if you remember the Clippy, the little paperclip on Microsoft Word, the really annoying thing that popped up once you started writing in Microsoft Word. Imagine if that has taken over all bureaucracy and all interactive stuff, and the prison system and the authorities are all run by automated bots, where you know how hard it is to when you call like a customer service line, you got to keep hitting zero, you want to talk to a human being. Imagine if that was everything you did. And it kind of takes it to an absurd level. And it's a little bit chilling, a little bit goofy at times, but it's a really neat little film. So those are neat. And then of course the documentaries, there's one called Audible, which is about the lives of people with hard of hearing. There's one called The Queen of Basketball, which is about this woman who played for the NBA. There's several of these from different countries. There's one called Lead Me Home, one called Three Songs for Benazir, and one called When We Were Bullies. So these are labors of love. Even if you don't like the short films in particular, they will broaden your mind and they will give you an idea of what's out there. I champion these every year, and shame on the Academy for sidelining them in their upcoming award shows, because these people need the recognition. I'm going to have to say that all three slates of 2022 Oscar-nominated short films rock.
It rocks.
Excellent!
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Batman and The Weekend Away. To Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about the big one that's here this weekend, and that is The Batman. Not just Batman, it is The Batman. It's under T in the phone book, but this is the reboot of The Caped Crusader, in which a Zodiac-style killer is haunting Gotham, and it's up to a vigilante detective to track him down.
When that light hits the sky, it's not just a call. So mourn it.
I've been trying to reach you.
This is a powder keg, and Rither's to match.
I can
take care of myself.
I don't care what happens to me.
It's only going to get worse for you.
This is very difficult for me because I don't really fanboy out about Batman movies anymore. I remember when I was like 18 when Tim Burton's Batman came out. And there, I had my issues with it, and I was critical of different things, like Alfred would never bring Vicki Vale to the Batcave, and I thought the use of the Prince music was kind of stupid. But I really kind of liked the vision that Tim Burton gave, and I liked the sequels. And over the years, you know, well, I mean, I liked Batman Returns. The Joel Schumacher sequels got a little bit insane. And as much as I enjoyed The Dark Knight and what Christopher Nolan did, I thought he went off the rails in A Dark Knight Rises. I think his Nolanverse trilogy is horribly flawed. And even The Dark Knight has some serious flaws in it, but it's a very compelling, fun movie to watch. I liked Ben Affleck as Batman. I thought he did a great Batman. I thought he did a great Bruce Wayne. That's something else you got to realize when it comes to a Batman movie. I always thought that Christian Bale was an okay Batman. I thought he was a decent Bruce Wayne. I thought that George Clooney, he's a lousy Batman. But you know what? He made a pretty good Bruce Wayne. I thought that Ben Affleck could do both. In this one, I think Robert Pattinson does a very good Batman, but a lousy Bruce Wayne. Because he comes across as this tortured, emo, brooding teenager, even though he's, I don't know, he's probably in his 30s by now, but he just seems like a whiny little butthole. And I'm not into him as Bruce Wayne. As Batman, I think he's kind of cool. And what's interesting about this movie is there are people who went and saw this and just went, oh my God, it's the greatest thing ever. Oh geez, oh God, it's so awesome. And I have very mixed feelings about this movie. Overall, I think the idea of making it a detective story is good. That's the direction they need to go. You don't need to have the big, goofy set pieces that they had in the Joel Schumacher movies. But actually have him be a detective. He doesn't do a whole lot of detecting in this. He wanders around crime scenes a lot. But he doesn't really detect. He just makes guesses all the time, and most of the time they're wrong. So I don't know. I don't buy him as the world's greatest detective in this, but I like the setup. They do some interesting narration and building of the dread and the grittiness, which falls very much in line, especially in the comics that were done in the 80s and 90s. I really appreciate that. I like what they did with the Riddler. I like that sort of that Zodiac style of character. Leans a little bit too close to some elements of the Joker, but that's okay. I can forgive it. The Penguin, I think it's an interesting choice. They got Colin Farrell to basically play a crime boss. But he's not like the Burgess Meredith. It's a much, much more of just sort of like that's his nickname in the crime field. But and here's the thing with Catwoman. Zoe Kravitz plays Catwoman. And I don't have a problem with her performance. I have a problem with her size. I mean, she looks like she's 100 pounds soaking wet. She looks like a twig. She does not look like she's a formidable opponent. And it's not like they have her doing like judo moves. Like if you watch like Peacemaker on HBO Max, you've got the judo master character who's tiny, but he uses judo, which is a martial arts known for using leverage and the weight of your opponent against her. She's just kicking her legs and stuff, but I don't get the feeling that she actually is delivering any sort of power behind this. But the biggest problem with the Batman is it's 3 hours long. It's not the Batman. It's the Batman. There's no reason for this thing to be 3 hours long. A movie has to earn it. And this movie does not earn the 3 hours of its running time. And the problem is, when you get past the 2 hour mark and they're like, oh, still adding twists and turns on the plot, you're just like, okay, come on, we gotta finish the movie, crying out loud. And the stuff that at the beginning is kind of cool, the narration and the long shots and the slow-mo, by the time you're in your third hour, you're watching this thing going, this is why it's so long. They're wasting time with narration and slow motion. If they just would run this thing at normal speed, it would have been a 2 hour, 15 minute movie, but half the movie's in slow-mo. Now, like something like the Avengers Endgame, you're like, well, that was the 3 hours long. And like, you know, Spider-Man Far From Home, that was a long movie. But those movies earned it because they were the culmination of several movies and they're dealing with multiple characters and multiple arcs. This is dealing with Batman. And that's it. It's just Batman. Solving a crime. I loved some of the things they did, but I also felt that it squandered all that. And ultimately what it is I think there's a need for the studio to come in and say, no, if you're going to have a movie that's topping more than 2 hours and 10 minutes, you have to have a pretty doggone good reason. And Matt Reeves did not give them a good reason. I mean, aside from the fact that it's overly dark and grim, I mean, you're going to be wishing and longing for the bubblegum pop days of Zack Snyder at a certain point, thinking, gosh, I wish it was as happy-go-lucky as the Snyderverse movies were, because this is so heavy. But that kind of, and I'm fine with doing it, and it's kind of in line with the Joker type of aesthetic, but it just goes on too long. It does not earn it. So still, it's an okay Batman movie. It's just too long. But I'll give the Batman a kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I'm going to quickly burn through this one. It's The Weekend Away. It's on Netflix. During a weekend getaway in Croatia, a woman investigates the sudden disappearance of her friend.
Did you lose something?
My friend.
Let's start with the details. Several people saw you and Kate argue.
Come on, let's relive our misspent youth.
I'm married.
Relax, it'll be an adventure.
You just gotta come home.
I can't. The police have taken my passport.
You didn't argue with Kate hours before she died.
It wasn't an argument.
Your story keeps changing.
They say you're a suspect in Kate's murder.
This one stars Leighton Meester, and it's based on a best-selling book. She goes to visit a friend of hers who's at least staying in Croatia, and they're going to have a night on town, and she's from London. So it's just a hop, skip, and the jump, like a 2-hour plane ride. It's like going from St. Louis to Chicago. So it's not like she, even though she's going to a different country. And her friend disappears and she's trying to investigate, but then she's finding herself in the middle of the investigation. She's being looked at and questioned, and it's a thriller, and it works to a degree. The big problem with this movie is I keep wanting to say, why don't you just go to the embassy? At some point, you should go to the embassy because you are clearly going to get arrested. It has some decent stuff. I find it interesting because Leighton Meester's in it. And, you know, she was this young, hot ingenue back about 15 years ago. Well, now she's in her mid-30s. And, again, this is not being cruel about her age, but, I mean, she's no longer 20. And I saw this with a couple weeks ago when I did the movie, The Legend of Lunyarna. You had Autumn Reeser in there, and she was another one who was this sort of young ingenue, and she's in her 40s now. So she's moving into the mother parts and the middle-aged woman parts. And I give Leighton Meester credit for taking a role that's not trying to deny her age. She's a reasonable age for this, and she works in this, and I think she does a fine job in this one. It is a little bit textbook and cardboard, and you can make certain guesses, and it does have too many twists to it, where you're just like, okay, after a certain number of twists, you're like, nothing has that many twists. It becomes absurd if it has too many twists to it. But still, it's not a bad little throwaway hour and a half thriller to watch on Netflix if you're looking for something to check out. So yeah, The Weekend Away kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Scary of 61st and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Pieces of Her. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the final movie on the list, and that is The Scary of 61st. This is available on the Shudder streaming service. After moving into a creepy apartment in New York City, two roommates go down a rabbit hole of conspiracy theories and psychosis.
Something extremely sinister happened in this apartment.
Are you in danger? You came here for a reason.
I came here to get closer to the truth.
I felt washrooms throughout the town. townhouse.
No one is watching us.
They are.
If you're persistent in your quest, your path will reveal the deepest secrets.
We found this card.
Where?
Our house.
Move out. You don't understand. You're in grave danger.
What's interesting about this movie is it could have been shot and released in the 70s. Even though it's dealing with contemporary story elements, like part of it is these roommates and these women are focusing on Jeffrey Epstein and the theories behind it. And one of the characters is, spends way too much time on the internet and spends way too much time on Reddit, where she's believing in all these insane conspiracy theories. But then they're dealing with occult issues and demonic and possession and that sort of stuff. At the beginning, when it starts up, it's done in a very retro feel. And I actually was wondering, maybe this is an older film. And then they pulled out White Claw and started drinking that. I'm like, okay, no, these are just crazy white girls in New York City. But it's directed and co-stars Dasha Nekrasova. And she's best known. Apparently, she was in some video that went viral through the InfoWars site where she was extolling her support of Bernie Sanders while wearing a Sailor Moon costume. I don't know. But look, this is a weird movie. In a way, and like I said, the way it's shot, I think it's even shot on film, but it looks like it's shot on like 16 millimeter, somewhat out of focus at times, not terribly well lit. But that gives it this aesthetic from the 70s, or even maybe even something that has an aesthetic of an old giallo horror film where it was imperfect in a lot of ways. The movie itself stumbles at times. At times it really goes into some chilling elements, and then other times it swerves off the rails and the characters start doing something that, you know, God bless them as actors, they're giving it their all, but it gets absurd and silly. And because it's dealing with like just Jeffrey Epstein stuff, it's dealing with some unpleasant subject matter, and it does get a little bit raw at times. I have to say there's moments that I was ready to give up on it. But then I was like, suddenly, well, no, this is going down an interesting rabbit hole. And it shows, I mean, this one character that the director plays herself, she's the one who just keeps chasing these insane ideas and insane conspiracy theories and insane ideas. And it goes to a level of psychosis. But there's also some, I would almost say silliness involved in it. And I don't know if some of this stuff is deliberate, because there's elements of this movie that, particularly the acting, the characters acting, it's almost like they took Nancy Loomis from Halloween and Halloween 3. If you don't know who she is, she's the sheriff's daughter in those movies. And she has this sort of this flat delivery of lines that's not very well acting, but she was like somehow related or married to one of the filmmakers. It's like everybody's delivering their lines like her, almost purposely, almost this very flippant understatement, and things happen and you can't tell the time frames. Like the two girls that are going to investigate this stuff, this all seems to be happening over the course of a day or two, but then another girl, it's happening over the course of maybe weeks as she's kind of going down this road of madness. So it doesn't quite sync up, and you can't quite tell whether this is just bad writing or if they deliberately did it to be off-putting. So if you want to give them the benefit of the doubt, it does some interesting stuff. It goes down some interesting roads. Some of it's absurd, and some of it's at times, dare I say, even laughable. But there are elements to it that I actually really respected and thought they put together like half of a really good movie, and then the other half is fraught with problems. But I'm willing to forgive it for keeping my attention at least. So I'm going to have to say The Scary of the 61st, while imperfect in a lot of ways, still kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the Home Cinema Roundup. The Home Cinema Roundup spotlight this week is kind of, I'm cheating a little bit and going back to Netflix and talking about a series. And that is Pieces of Her. After a random violent incident, a woman finds herself a target of her dangerous past, sending her daughter on the run.
You don't have much time. You have to leave. Can't talk to anyone, okay? No calls, no texting, nothing. There are just some things you don't understand.
Every time I think I get closer to knowing her, it slips away.
We all do things we'd rather forget.
Mom, just tell me the truth.
Who are you?
The biggest draw to this one, I think, is actually Toni Collette as the mother in this situation. And it starts off where the woman, she's a speech therapist, played by Toni Collette, and her daughter, played by Bella Heathcote, is a 911 operator. And they live in Savannah, Georgia, and they're out for lunch, and a violent incident happens, and it kind of catches them. The mother becomes somewhat heroic in it and gets a lot of media attention. But by getting that media attention, suddenly that reignites something from her past. People who are looking for her are coming after her, and she's suddenly on the radar of people that she doesn't want to be on the radar. This then sends them, you know, sort of circling the wagons, but at the same time, the mother sends the girl off. She's like, she gives her directions, tells her where to go and what to do. And like any, you know, child that doesn't always listen. I mean, she's like turning 30. That's kind of like part of the thing. But as you know, anybody who's got kids knows that your adult kids listen to you about as much as your teenage kids do. And so she goes on this own journey of discovery to try and sort of figure out what's going on in her life and what was going on in her mom's life. There is a little bit of frustration with this because there's times where everybody's like, what's going on? I can't explain. And you're like, just sit down and freaking explain what's going on. But they can't explain. It's the Lost syndrome. I remember when the series Lost came out, almost 20 years ago. And in order to propel the story, they had to put roadblocks in for people to talk. And I'm like, gosh, if I crash land on an island, first thing I'm doing, I'm going around, okay, who's got military training? Who's got medical training? Who's a nutritionist? Who can fish? Who can hunt? Who can do this? Who is a nurse? Who can help people out if they hurt themselves? Who's got navigation? Who's got military experience that you can figure out where we were going and why we landed? And but they never do that in Lost. They do that in order to propel the story. And that's kind of what they do in this one. They string you along, and maybe about four or five episodes in, you start really getting some answers. So it does drag. That's one of the dangers when you have a TV series like this, is in order to stretch out the drama and the interest in the story, it can drag a little bit rather than making it interesting to watch. And that is a danger in this series, because I do feel like by the time you figure out what's going on, which is four or five episodes in, it kind of loses steam because you're like, oh, now I know everything. And the crux of the show can't be what is the story, because then you spend that whole time obscuring the story, whereas really the story needs to be about how people deal with each other. And you can't just have four or five episodes where you're guessing as to what the backstory is. You need to actually have the characters develop. So it loses steam for me. It lost steam for me once you figured out what was going on, because then at that point you want everybody to get back together to solve this problem, and everybody scattered to the four winds. So, I'm mixed on this one. Overall, I'm going to say Pieces of Her. I'm going to give it a kind of rocks, but it does struggle with what it's trying to accomplish with the characters, and it does change its path about halfway through the show. But I'm still going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Also available out there in terms of new releases, you've got Belfast and Flea and Demonic are all available as new films. And then for vintage, you've got The Batman, The Complete Series, which is an animated series, which is not nearly as gritty as the Batman movie. And that's it for this week. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Turning Red and The Adam Project. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.